On for Cofield and Company. Live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Yeah! All right, here we go. Friday. Fun. We'll find out. The very menacing Greg Salerno is manning the set at Treasure Island, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Cofield here in... We'll explain what looks like a cave. I got to get some more light on me for our award-winning live videos. But I am in Hawaii. I'm on Honolulu. We got some Hawaiian guests coming up to get us a feel for not only the UNLV game, but also the island. Greg, how are you, buddy?
Good, man. It's kind of cool. I was off for a couple days, and I come back to a three-day weekend.
Are you in a good mood?
Not really. I mean... Yeah. You know, it's my permanent mood from now on, but it's something I can really do about it. So
Yep. I was talking to you about Tuesday's action before Tuesday, and you had some confidence. I was like, we'll see. We'll see what happens. So,
yeah. I guess, I still do. The math doesn't add up, so whatever. Yeah. We can go on. You know,
I guess bury yourself in football because it's here. Last night was a good Thursday night game. I still think the Bengals can be plucky, but they keep piling up losses, and they wound up losing at the end against the Ravens after going back and forth with them. We'll get some opinions on the Ravens in just a couple minutes. Griffin sent over a story about a Ravens fan being very demanding towards the middle of the game, saying, let's get it together, a-holes, yelling at his Ravens. Is there anything wrong with doing that when you're a contender and your somewhat heavily favored team is not playing well? They were laying six going in, and, I mean, they really had to pull it out, you know, pull the rabbit out of the hat. To get that one, is that an overly critical, because that's what Griffin thought, overly critical fan?
I kind of, but I sort of understand it. When you're playing a team that's considered kind of a rival, that, you know, it's obviously a division game, you're not doing what you think you're going to do. And the Ravens defense hasn't looked like the Ravens defense. I mean, they're winning the games, but they had to score 100 to do it. So, I mean, if you're Joe Burrow and you pass for over 400 yards on four TDs, but you can only get 49 yards rushing, I mean, you're probably not going to win the game. But if I'm a Ravens fan and I see Joe Burrow torching our defense, it's supposed to be awesome, I'd probably be pissed halfway through the game too.
Well, I mean, one, Burrow is good. Two, Ja'Marr Chase is probably the best or second best receiver in football. But the bigger point I get, the Ravens consistently have not been good defensively against the pass, and that is going to be a problem in the AFC if you're going to try to make it through the AFC, which is why I'm not so high on the Ravens until they get this fixed.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not apples to apples, but if you look at, like, the Eagles, for instance, I've been maligning their defense all season, and they've actually turned around a little bit, and they play the Bengals and only give up 17 at the Bengals. So if you're a Ravens fan, you're like, dude, what is wrong with our defense? You know, how are we going to win a Super Bowl with this? You're not going to beat the Chiefs in the playoffs with that defense. I mean, not saying that it'll be the same defense then, but if you really have aspirations for a Super Bowl, you need a better defense.
Griffin, would you like to defend yourself, or you just want to come across as just someone who's really soft on football fans?
These Baltimore Raven fans are so greedy. Their team has been contenders for however long since Ray Lewis had pads on. And while all the other fan bases, we're over here, we're suffering. We don't know what it's like to make it to the playoffs every year with an MVP quarterback with a great history and culture of defense. That must be really nice, and it must be so hard on these fans to see their team struggle just a little bit on Thursday Night Football. And then they just want to moan about it. It's ridiculous.
But that's what happens when you get to this level. There are four or five teams in the National Football League that expect to win at a high level and expect to win the Super Bowl. And the Ravens are one of those teams that hasn't solved the mystery of Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. So, yeah, you're right. They're all brackets of fans. There are the pathetic fans at the very bottom, which used to include the Lions. Given another year or so when the Lions can't win a Super Bowl or don't, and I think they can, but those fans will act like that. It's just the way of the fan, man. There's no reality to it. They're not sizing up what the garbage five organizations at the bottom of the NFL do, right? I mean, Eagles fans now, hey, it's Super Bowl or bust. If you go 11-7, 12-5, you fall short. The season sucked.
I think you hit on it there too, because Griffin's a Bears fan, and I'm not trying to make fun, but I mean, obviously they haven't had a lot of success recently. Yep. So I mean, if I'm a Bears fan and I'm watching a team who wins a lot, who has won a, you know, has gotten close to Super Bowls, deep in the playoffs, et cetera, won Super Bowls in the past, and I'm a Bears fan, then, yeah, I'm probably like, what the hell, man? You should be happy with what you have. But as an Eagles fan, I kind of get it, because we just won a Super Bowl a few years ago, went to a Super Bowl a couple years ago, And I still get mad when they're losing a game I think they should win. So yeah. I think expectations has a lot to do with it, like you said.
And the same thing goes, I think, even more wildly out of control. And I don't think Ravens fans are out of control. But in college football, this weekend will be a massive weekend for a lot of coaches. They don't win or they lose badly, or a couple of cases are actually off this week. But between Florida and USC and Oklahoma and Purdue, West Virginia, Central Florida, Arkansas, Baylor, Auburn, Oklahoma, to varying degrees, their coaches are all sort of on a hot seat now, or at least for the future. And you look at it, you're like, well, you know, college football is a lot more balanced, folks. It's harder to win now than it's ever been. You guys are not the only ones who can pay players like you used to, but they don't want to hear that. They expect it to be just like it was 5 and 10 and 20 years ago. So I understand why they're being unrealistic, because they don't understand what's going on right now. And then we get to the NBA, where I saw this the other day and I thought of you. Paul George goes back to the Clippers. The Clippers honor him for some reason, which Ballmer's got to get his head on straight. You don't need to honor Paul George. Right. And then Paul George was like, why are they booing me? There's a lot of reasons they're booing you, PG-13.
It's so funny because, first of all, have you never watched sports before? Like, I don't know if he's just never seen sports or doesn't understand. And it's funny because we talked about this with Paul George the opposite way going into Philly. Like, if he didn't perform in Philly, could he handle that kind of market? Is he the kind of person that's used to negativity? Yep. And the first little bit of negativity he gets, he doesn't react well to it. So,
and believe me, the Clippers are nothing. That wall is cool. And this is like the brief moment where Clippers fans rise up and get all pissed off. Like, bro, do you understand what you're walking into? I hope someone pulled him aside and goes, what you just saw, that could be every freaking home game down the stretch for the last 15 games of the season if you guys aren't doing what you're supposed to do, or in the playoffs.
Yeah, 100%. And you're going to hear it, man. You know, if you think that's bad, wait till you get to Philly and something happens and Bede's hurt and the series doesn't go the way that they want. You're going to have an entire offseason of people wanting you out of town. So, I mean, getting celebrated but the Clippers and getting a few boos would be the least of his worries.
College basketball is here. We're going to get to UNLV and Memphis a little later in the show. But big-time tournament in town for the Name, Image, Likeness Tournament Players Era. It's coming up on November 26th, 27th, and 30th. We got two sets of tickets. You get Tuesday, Wednesday session. Caller 6 and 7. Caller 6 and 7. Caller 6 and 7. You can get your tickets at AXS.com. But Griffin's got multiple sets of tickets right now. Caller 6 and 7,
364-1100. Live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, former NFL cornerback and Next Level Chef contestant Mark McMillan joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Let's bring in the chef. Mark, what's going on, buddy?
What's going on, man? I wish I was down there at Treasure Island to try some of that delicious food.
How many times have you been to Hawaii? Because I know you worked with the bowl game down here, the high school bowl game. How many times? Over 10?
At least over 10, yeah. I went when I was playing, and then I went a couple of times doing football camps and high school bowl games.
Oh, there you go. Explain your role in the high school bowl game, the Prospects Bowl.
Well, you know, I was the coach of the All-American Bowl game that I was coaching. So we choose kids from all over the country during the season, evaluate their film. Me, George Teague, Fred Barnett, Larry Sinners. So we had a really good cast of coaches that coached in the high school All-American game.
There you go. I failed to book Rich Miano, who I don't know if Greg remembers the name, but he's a former Jet and a former Eagle, and you know, played with you. And Rich does a lot of good things down here, including he's one of the voices of Hawaii football. Went to Hawaii.
Yeah, how can you not have Rich Miano on, man? Rich
Miano,
he's a legend on that island.
I know. It just hit me now. I was like, damn, I didn't reach out to Rich. We talked to him every single year. All right. Well, let's bookend this discussion about football with some chef and some food. When you come to Hawaii, what is your favorite thing to get?
I got to get a loco moco. You got to get a loco moco. For people that don't understand, it's a beef patty on top of some rice with some gravy. Then you have a little mac salad on the side. You can't beat it. And then also my first pit stop is called Zippy's on the island. You got to go to Zippy's, get that fried chicken, that chili, that mac salad, man. You can't go wrong with that.
You know we got Zippy's in town. There's a Zippy south of 215 off, I think it's Rainbow, and there's a new one opening up out on Hualapai between Trop and, I think between Trop and Jones or south of Trop. So you got Zippy's in Vegas.
Yeah, I heard that, but you know it's different over there on the island, man. It just has a different flavor, different feel. that Zippy's over there in the island, man. That thing's been standing for over tornadoes, storms, all kind of stuff.
Mark, what did you think of the Ravens and Bengals? Because there was a lot of layers to the game yesterday. You can kind of see why the Cincy fans should be frustrated, because the Bengals are as good as anyone in the AFC, but they just continue to come up a little bit short.
Yeah, like I said, Joe Burrow got healthy. Ja'Marr Chase got his guy back. And they didn't even have T. Higgins. You know, they didn't have T. Higgins. So, you know, the defense played well for the Ravens, man. They're just a couple of bad mistakes at the end. Lamar Jackson, man, is just unreal. You know, it's hard to contain that young man, especially when he gets outside the pocket. He was making jump passes. You know, he's just like a video game. But the Bengals, man, if they could have got that win, man, they could have went on a nice little winning streak, because they're really good. And, man, you can't say enough about Joe Burrow, man. One of the toughest quarterbacks in the league. Took a lot of late hits that I thought should have been penalties, but the referee didn't call them.
Talking to Chef Mark McMillan, what can the Bengals do to get a run? I mean, I know it's a stupid question, but it feels like if the Bengals had a run game, they'd be a completely different team. And I'm going to ask you about the Cowboys here in a second, the same thing. What can they do to – I mean, because if you're playing the Ravens and they double you in the run game, but you're still – I mean, if Burrow has 400 yards, four touchdowns, what's he supposed to do?
Well, you know, they did exactly what they're supposed to do, man. They just came up short on the defensive end of the ball. Like you said, Joe threw for over 400-something yards. Chase went for over 200 yards. Which is embarrassing for the second, but the Ravens have one of the worst passing defenses in the league, and one of the best running games in the league. So it was like a catch 22. So the Ravens did everything that they were supposed to do late in the game. The turnover by Marlon Humphrey really turned the table on the game. You know, allowing them to go down and score, and then Lamar just did what Lamar's been doing all year, man, leading them down. But I know the Beagle fans are really frustrated, but man, those guys played their tails off. On a short week, you know, they had a short week. So, man, that's one thing about the NFL, man. I just really don't agree about these guys playing, you know, these short games, especially in a division game like that with your opponent coming up. You know, it's tough, man. It was a tough break to see the Bengals lose, because they had all the momentum going into that fourth quarter.
Talking about the football and the running game, the Eagles take on the Cowboys this week, and now obviously Dak is out for the season now, I believe. And I think it's going to be Cooper Rush. Last time they went on a little run with him, but they actually had a run game back then. And Steve talked about this last week. They actually had guys that could run the football. Are the Cowboys going to be able to generate any offense against the Eagles without Dak and with no running game?
Well, first of all, I would not say that D word. I'll just say that team in Texas. You know, it is that hate week where we don't like that other team in Texas. But like I said, they're coming in humbling, man. You know, obviously no CeeDee Lamb probably. No Dak Prescott. Both of those guys got big bank accounts, though. You know, they got that big bag, and then all of a sudden they get hurt. But I just hope we just mop them dudes up and down the field. I hope Jerry Jones retires after this game. I want to beat the brakes off that star. I do not like that team still. I know I got a lot of friends, you know, Mike and Emmett and all those guys who played against those guys. But I do not like that team in Texas, and I hope we beat the brakes off of them.
You know, it's funny because being an Eagles fan, and I used to play for the Eagles, I feel the same way. But it's Coach Sirianni now. Okay, last week, again, they win. But after the game, most of the talk from Eagles fans and from the Eagles press is, what is Sirianni doing? He's giving up points. Why is he doing this? What does he need to do? I mean, if they come out to the Cowboys and they win, but it's not convincing – and he screws up a couple times and gives away points, is he still going to be on the – I mean, can they win like five games in a row and he still be on the hot seat?
He's still going to be on the hot seat, man. I don't care if you're in Philly, if you win three in a row and you lose one to the team in Texas, you're going to be on the burner seat.
Right.
I know all the news stations have been really hot about some of the coaches' decisions. You would think he would learn by now by leaving so many points out there on the field and you know, putting situations that game shouldn't even been close. You know, obviously, you know, they have really good offense. The defense played well, but you're giving these guys so many opportunities, and some of the calls that he was making and some of the positions he's been put in this year, it's almost like being here in Vegas and some of the decisions that the Raiders are making as far as their coaching decisions. So it's hard to watch, man, because you're just looking at the team. It's like, wow, they're playing well. Saquon Barkley, good Lord, what is that man? And what is he made out of?
That was my next question. I know you obviously are a football player. You're around athletes all the time. You know guys who are super, super seriously great athletes. Have you ever seen a guy do a reverse hurdle like that before?
I've never seen anything like that in my life. Like I said, I've played against some really good athletes, watched a lot of film of football. I haven't had an opportunity to watch Saquon when he was in college at Penn State. They came to Arizona when they played in the Fiesta Bowl. My nephew, Cole Farmer, played, and I got an opportunity to meet him. And just seeing him in person, you would not believe the size of this dude's legs and his calves. It's unbelievable. And for what he did, I don't think we can do it any justice by saying he did a 360. He turned his back, and a player is coming to nail him in the back, and he just does a vertical jump over the guy and still continue to move forward. Unbelievable, man. Those T-shirts should be flying off the shelf right now.
Mark, in your long career, and we're talking to Mark McMillan, Chef Mark McMillan on Cofield and Company. In your long career, did you ever go through some sort of a coaching change, either with the DC or the head coach? And what do you think of what the Raiders are doing here and if it's actually going to work with the Turners now in charge of the offense?
Yeah, I've been through that in New Orleans when Coach Mora, you know, came in and just said, hey, I'm done. You know, we were like, wait a minute. You know, the team meeting, we just lost to the Carolina Panthers. And, you know, just a regular meeting on Monday, we just think like, okay, we'll go through the film. And he just started crying. We're like, wait a minute, why is he crying? Like, you know, we just lost the game. It's okay. And he's like, hey, I'm done. And we're like, whoa. So, you know, we had an interim head coach come in. And, you know, we're playing for our jobs then. And, you know, you just got to go out there and just do the best you can. And like I said, with Norv Turner coming in town, obviously Norv, I played with when I was with the Eagles. He was the offensive coordinator for the Cowboys. So I'm very familiar with the way he can call plays and get after it and you know, make schemes happen. And then his son was just a little – his son was a little guy running around the locker room. Now he's the offensive coordinator for the Raiders. So it's going to be pretty cool when I get a chance to see those two guys. So Norv is a genius as far as calling plays. I don't expect a big change that's going to happen because the quarterback situation is still unstable with the Raiders. So like Max Crosby said, maybe they're just going to be the spoilers of the NFL and try to knock some teams out of the playoff.
By the way, Mark, happy birthday to your mom.
Oh, yeah, man, 79 years old, man, and still going nice. Strong, still cracking the whip. You know, she still listens to the shows and watch all the shows. One of the biggest fans, man. Mom's is she's the OG. We call her the OG of the family, the original gangster for those people that doesn't know about a little Ebonics. Original gangster. She's the OG of the family, so happy birthday, Mom.
Well, I know you got a little bit of your cooking chops from Mom, maybe a lot of bit. This week I saw chicken, sausage, and spinach soup and a salmon bowl that you made.
Oh, man, I did a nice little salmon bowl with my Grilla McMillan spices cooking with Clara. Then I got a little brown rice, and I made up a little ginger sauce for my salmon bowl. So I try to eat a little healthy, and then I made this soup. I was like, man, I'm just in the flavor for some soup. And, man, just made roasted some chicken, put some spices and stuff on there, made a nice little broth, some tomatoes, fresh tomatoes, fresh carrots, fresh celery. Everything was fresh. And, yes, I got a garden now, so I'll be able to take some pictures. You can see my garden, my vegetables coming straight out the garden. So the chicken and the sausage soup came out amazing. I worked on my gumbo, so stay tuned for those gumbo pictures. My roux is on point, so stay tuned, boys.
The pressure of the roux. The pressure of the roux. Mark, we appreciate it, man. Have a good weekend with all the football. And, again, you want to follow Mark up on Twitter for all the food photos and all the events he's doing. Thanks, bro.
All right, appreciate you guys. And Roll Tide, beat LSU.
That's a big game. That's a really big game. Eliminator, really, for LSU if they don't win. And then Alabama's in real trouble if they lose as well. All right, coming back, we'll get to some NBA, and then we'll do our college football roundup with National Insider Michael Felder towards the end of the hour.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Treasure Island and Honolulu as Steve Cofield getting ready for the UNLV-Hawaii game. Greg Salerno is at Treasure Island. You got some cool giveaways today. I saw a Gillies hat.
Yeah, Flying J's are like $6.
I think I lost Salerno.
think he just needs to put the headphones down on his head.
Yeah, I don't know why he's – I think he forgot. I think he forgot what he's doing. Look at him. I don't think he knows he's on.
He doesn't know we're talking all this mess about him right now.
Yes. Look, and now Mateo's like, hey, the show's back.
Is that me?
Yes. Good thing
Sorry.
You didn't cuss. You're just sitting there with your headphones on the top of your head and the mic off in the distance. And I asked you a question. I heard something in the background. I'm like, I don't know what's going on right
Sorry.
Now.
Sorry. I'll tell you what happened. So we're at TI, Golden Circle over here, giant HD screens, great food, everything hanging out here at the TI. And somebody came over to bring us stuff for tomorrow because there's another show going to be here tomorrow.
Sure.
And so I was like texting out that the thing was there and putting stuff under the table. And I wasn't paying attention.
Uh-oh.
So.
Uh-oh.
I don't know what happened.
By the way, 82 degrees here in Honolulu, but it actually has been raining since we got here, so it finally broke, and now it's a little bit sunny outside. Some of my friends, actually regulars on the show in Denver, with a bunch of buddies in Denver radio, sent me a picture of a patio, and it looked like they had like 12 inches of snow. And my response was,
wow.
it's early November. Why do you live like this?
That's horrible. It's like people that live in a floodplain, and the next year the flood comes again. They're like, why do floods keep coming? It's like, dude, there's winter every year.
Now, that said, Colorado might be 68 or 70 degrees tomorrow.
That's true. Yeah, you're right.
That's how it happens.
So, have you been to Hawaii several times?
I've been here, I think, 5 times now, not to sound spoiled. But, yeah, I've been here one time on vacation. Actually, twice to Maui. Once to Maui? Anyway, Maui and then about 5 times to this is not the Big Island. It is Oahu.
Oh, wow. See, I've never been. I was supposed to go once. I was working at doing Monday Night Footballs at the Hustler Club, and I met a girl there, and we were going to go to Hawaii, and our flight got canceled, and they charged me for the Airbnb, and I got totally screwed.
You told me that story off the air. It's one of the more horrific stories I've ever heard about getting
It really is bad.
Because you had a connector, and the airlines were like, you know what? It's because I asked you last week with who knows if it gets unraveled now, but there was a big deal made of any flights that's canceled now, you get your money back. The airline's not allowed to give you the rigmarole for, you know, days and weeks.
Yeah. No, they tried to give me one for a few days, and I was like, there's nothing I could do. I had to go back to work. I wouldn't have enough time to go at that point. And so they charged me not only for some kind of air thing, but they also charged me for the Airbnb in Maui, even though I couldn't get there.
What would you do if the girl you met was from Hawaii and you had to come to Hawaii all the time on short trips?
Yeah, I don't know.
I actually have I have a friend who is doing that. And I'm like, you are
really?
You are a lunatic. A 5.5-6 hour flight here and then back. I'm not sure what it is, about the same, a little faster, but yeah.
Like, did he make like $1 million a year or something?
Seems like a couple times a month maybe. That's a long trip.
If I could afford it.
That's a long trip.
It really is.
I don't know what the hell is going on. I do know we have a good giveaway here every Friday. It's our Porta Subs giveaway. 364-1100, caller number 7, 364-1100. It's a Porta Subs, your neighborhood sandwich shop. And don't forget, they've got the and by the way, we're giving away a 2-foot classic sub here, so this is a biggie. 364-1100, and don't forget that right now they've got the Pilgrim available, which is a tremendous, tremendous sub with the fresh turkey, the savory herb stuffing, the tangy cranberry sauce. All on rosemary Swiss bread. It's Porta Subs. We got 2-foot classic sub going on right now. Caller 7, 364-1100.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield and Company back here on this Friday as we're live in Hawaii before the UNLV Hawaii game and Treasure Island of the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. And our college football insider, Michael Felder, is with us. Lots to get into with the college football playoff. I love it more than anyone in the country. And last week, I really do. Last week, we saw some movement and potential setups moving forward in the college football playoff with Ohio State and Penn State. Ohio State wins. Do we downgrade Penn State in this game, or we just walk away and go, you know what, close game, could have gone the other way?
It could have gone the other way, but the thing for me is, I mean, how much more leeway are we going to give to Franklin? And that's the part that's the most interesting thing to me, the most interesting aspect, because we're watching this team and we're like, did you ever at any time in point watching that game, you were like, oh, they're going to win? I never felt like that watching that game. And so it's going to be really interesting to see what they're able to take, how they can take care of business going forward. But I think for them, maybe the best thing is to not go to the Big Ten Championship And then they'll still be just hanging out between somewhere between six at where they are now and 10. And they'll have an opportunity to get into the college football playoff and hopefully not have to play Ohio State, which seems to be like their biggest bugaboo.
Yeah, their play calling and close game failures continue. Yeah. And one thing I wanted to point out, because I know you love breaking down plays, they ran back-to-back plays where they put a 6'4", 346-pound offensive lineman split to the right, and they basically ran the same thing. He runs across the formation, and then both times he never found someone to block. I'm like, what is the point of running this once or twice?
Yeah, 71. I don't understand. Like you're not can like as soon as you said it, I knew exactly what you're talking about. I don't get it. And I will say this: Ohio State did a really good job, a better job probably than most of the most teams that they've played so far this year. That Penn State's played so far this year of recognizing where 71 was and where 44 was. Recognizing where those two players are is the most important part of defending Penn State, and they did it very well. And so it's going to be wild, the fact that, like, it's better. Again, we said it, it's better for them because, let's be real, who's at number 10? That's the team I love. I love that team. Kurt Cignetti, Rourke at Indiana. They're sitting there, excuse me, 11, not 10, 11. And Kurt Cignetti and that team sitting there at 11, that team is dangerous.
Yep.
They've been to the red zone more times than any team in the country. And I think that is a stat that we don't talk about enough. We talk about red zone conversions a lot, but who cares if you have a 90% red zone conversion rate if you've only been there 24 times? They've been there 54 times. So they get there twice as much. They can score, and they continue to convert. So I think that Indiana is we talked about it, was it 4 or 5 weeks ago when I said that Alabama and Tennessee are the most dangerous teams in the country. I think Indiana has become one of the most dangerous teams in the country.
Yep, Indiana can screw up a lot of hopes, including Penn State. If Indiana pulls off the upset against Ohio State, then I think Ohio State still stays above Penn State, as it should. They won. You had a list on your newsletter. It's Felter. Let me say it correctly. It's felter.substack.com of teams that eliminated themselves. Not technically, but they made it a lot harder.
Yeah.
And we're starting that whole thing I talked about a couple weeks ago with the Big 12 all knocking each other off, and Boise keeps moving up.
Yeah.
And is in position. They control their own destiny in terms of getting to the four and getting a bye, which is going to ACC people or Big 12 people are going to flip out.
Oh, they're going to lose their minds. But Iowa State, hey, you did yourself no favors. We're going to watch – we have to watch Iowa State, Kansas State, like BYU, and I – hang on. Because I've been – I'm getting ready to put out another one, another version of the format again. When you look at this thing, one of these things is not like the other, and it's BYU. BYU, still undefeated. Unreal what they're able to do.
Yeah.
But they're, but when you look at the teams that are supposed to get the byes right now, we're looking at Oregon. Oregon's top 12 in basically every stat you ever want. Georgia is top 12 in everything except offense, which, by the way, Carson Beck this weekend or last weekend was, ugh, wow, goodness gracious. And then BYU is just kind of hanging around. Miami obviously has Cam Ward, who a lot of folks have put into slotted into the top spot when it comes to quarterback. And then BYU is just, they are in, they're right in the middle of college football, but yet they still continue to win games. So, the Big 12 is, they've got a lot of, you know, what is it? Lucy, you got some splaining to do. They've got that going on right now because Iowa State, not as good as we thought they were, as good as we thought they could be. Kansas State, same thing. Cincinnati is kind of just hovering around as well. And so, oh, and by the way, we do actually have to start talking about Colorado, a Colorado team that's in the top 25.
Let's do it. Colorado is on the road against Texas Tech. Again, an eliminator, but Colorado, once again, controls its own destiny. If it wins out, it'll be in the Big 12 title game.
Yep.
What do you think happens this weekend? This is obviously a big one in Colorado's laying points at T-Tech.
I think that laying points is – what's the number?
4.5
4.5 Give me Colorado. I do. Really? I think that they are – yeah, I think that they have figured out who they are. And they found a way to create space. I do think Shadur is very, like, I think he's a very good quarterback, a quarterback that can push them to where they need to go. I'm not as in on the Travis Hunter as other people are with respect to the Heisman, but when you look at it, he does provide benefit to them. They also have other weapons that I don't think are getting discussed nearly as much. But the reality for me, Cofield, is when we look at this team, they have figured out who they are. They've, for lack of a better term, they've kind of shut up, right?
Yep.
Like, they've kind of just been like, hey, let's go out and win football games. It was one thing when we were a gimmick, or one thing, you know, a year ago when we did this, and there was a lot of sizzle. But I think this team's got a little bit of stake to them, and I think that's the part that's really interesting to watch.
Michael Felder, it's felder.substack.com. Some of the other eliminators. Well, we mentioned Indiana. They are in a favorite spot for the first time against Michigan since 1968. That doesn't even seem possible, but they're given 14 here. Michigan really couldn't get off the deck last week and make it. Well, they were competitive. What can the Wolverines do against Indiana? Could this be the upset?
I don't think this is the upset. I actually, somebody asked me about this the other day, and I said, give me the points. Lay the points. Yes, lay the points. I gotta get up on you. Listen, you guys are all out in Vegas, you got your own language. Lay the points. Because I do think Indiana, and this is great because my wife's not home. My wife went to Michigan State.
Yeah, don't keep it quiet.
So I have to say, when she's home, I gotta be quiet when I talk about her. But now, guess what? Hey, they go up 10 points early. 10-0. Oh, wow. The dream season's over for Indiana. And Indiana was like, what if we won by 37?
Yeah.
Like, listen, she watches the game in a separate room from me. Yeah. And listening to her just yell and be like, how is this happening? It's Indiana. Why? What? No.
That's awesome.
And I was just like, yeah, I just think they're good. And the problem is, it's the same problem that Michigan State – and Michigan have the same problems, right? Once they get down, they can't come back. That you can't do it. Indiana, they keep their pedal to the metal. And so for me, I think they win this game by 20 points, if we're being honest.
SEC eliminators, these are big ones, and it's the home teams that need the win, or then they're really in, they're out.
Yes.
First, Georgia and Ole Miss, and you mentioned Carson Beck in the cocktail party. Is there going to be a hangover here? Georgia's a very small favorite. Ole Miss is incredibly dangerous.
Yeah. They're a scary football team. They're super explosive. I think Lane Kiffin has realized that we have to go, 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 go. We can't just sit around and play it slow. They also realize how penetrative their defense has to be, because they cannot. They're not big enough. Between Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, LSU, they're not big enough to just hold on to guys and then try to make plays. They have to knife. They have to twist. They have to do stunts to get there, and that's going to be the part that's the most interesting to me.
LSU could be squarely in the mix with a win, and Alabama would be in real trouble.
Bad. They could be down bad.
Yep. That Vandy game.
But here, shout out to Vandy.
Yep.
That team Diego Pavia, and you guys got to see him firsthand, you know, before everybody else did, right? So
yeah, a bunch of times.
He's a player, and I love what he said. He said, every time I step on the field, I'm the best player out there. But to go back to LSU, Bama coming up, this is going to be one of those games where we need to see Alabama and Jalen Milroe. This isn't even about Kalen DeBoer to me. This is about that team realizing that Jalen Milroe is – in essence, the last, like, vestigial fiber that this team has to Nick Saban. And they need to cling to him like what are they called? A barnacle, basically. They need to cling to him like a barnacle so that he can get them to where they need to go. Like they need to be moray eels on Jalen Milroe the shark. They need to be that to get to where they want to be, which is in the playoff. And then once they get to the playoff, it's a second season, which we always talk about in the NFL, right? It's a second season, and then you get to figure things out. But you have to get to the second season to be able to figure everything else out.
We're live today in Hawaii, getting ready for UNLV and Hawaii, and at Treasure Island, Salerno, man in the set at Treasure Island. Tomorrow, of course, 9 to 11, throw the flag. They get you ready for the college football day with a 9A to 11A show. This is November 8th. I'm very proud of you. I'm very jealous because you're very organized. For the holidays, I'm already on Christmas. I've only staged four of my Christmas trees. I really haven't done much else.
No.
For Thanksgiving, you already have the turkey stock done, which is vital, and you finished off the cornbread, so now it's frozen time?
Yeah, cornbread goes in the freezer. I got to make one more cornbread. I got to make one that has a little jalapeno and cheddar in there as well. That's the next one that I'm going to do next round. Turkey stock. This is roasted turkey stock. I'm also going to make a smoked turkey stock. Those are all going to go in there. Love that. I like this. I tell you what, I go out for a run every day, and I'm seeing these Christmas decorations, and I'm like, are we skipping ahead?
Oh yeah.
Are we skipping? We're skipping a step. My birthday is Monday, November 25th. Thanksgiving is that Thursday. I'm like, oh, so you're skipping over my birthday too. That's how I feel.
Well, even worse, my significant other, her birthday is right around Thanksgiving too. So she's like pumping the brakes right now.
Yeah. We had a rule in my house growing up. We do not do Christmas decorations until Michael's birthday or Thanksgiving, whichever comes last.
Yep.
So we will go get a Christmas tree probably on the Sunday or the Saturday morning after Thanksgiving, but right now I'm still buying candy corn, baby. Like, let's go. We're living in fall, y'all.
You have to understand, when I get in the car most days, either going to work or especially coming from work, I pop on the holiday music and I'm like, thank God it's here. It's soothing. I start singing. I'm like,
oh, for sure.
All is good. I needed this.
I think a lot of us did.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't believe that all is good in these last three games for Miami. I am on upset alert every single week. Now, the problem with Georgia Tech is they're beat up at quarterback going in.
Yes, they are. Haynes King is hurt. So, and he's not, it doesn't look like he's going to be healthy to finish the season. We'll see if he gives it a go.
What do you think of the upset alert, though, with Miami the rest of the way? I think Miami is going to play itself to the bottom or out of this college football playoff. Right now, they've got Georgia Tech, then they've got Wake, then they've got Syracuse.
I think none of those teams are good enough to beat them.
Really?
Yeah, I don't, unless something really bad goes wrong, obviously knock on wood, like Cam Ward gets hurt. But I do think that their team is good enough. They're better defensively than I think we're giving them credit for. And when we watch them play, when I watch them play specifically, I'm looking at a team that I'm turning back on you. How many teams do you think actually believe in their quarterback?
That's a good point.
How many teams do you think? I think that Oregon believes in Dylan Gabriel. Miami believes in Cam Ward. I think Clemson believes in Cade Klubnik. And then what are we looking at?
You think Bama's behind Milroe?
Bama believes in Milroe, so we're looking at four. You think that? I don't think that they believe in Will Howard at Ohio State. I mean, after what we've seen him do at the end of games, what? I don't think that Georgia believes in Carson Beck. Tennessee certainly doesn't have to believe in Nico Iamalava. They believe in Dylan Sampson, the running back, for sure.
Yeah.
We saw Sark not believe in Quinn Ewers, by the way he put in Arch Manning pretty quickly, right? So I wonder, what does this look like? I think Indiana believes in Rourke, but I just don't know that they believe in their quarterback. And not believing in your quarterback is a tough place to be in. But Miami does believe in their guy, and it reminds me a little bit of not the year they won the national championship, but the year that they lost to Oregon, Florida State, in the second year of the playoff. The first year of the playoff when they lost to Oregon with Jameis Winston. Jameis could walk out there and tell those guys anything. They could walk on water because of him, and I think Cam Ward has that same ability.
That's funny. I heard Jimbo Fisher is doing some Sirius XM now, and they got on to Jameis Winston about his confidence in that. He threw an interception to be like, okay, let's go. Don't care. He just had steely nerves and a confidence that did seep down to the rest of the team. All right, well, let's close on that. Florida State. I was talking the other day, just sitting at a bar, and I'm like, wait, how many wins does Florida State have? I'm like, they only have one? This situation is really interesting. I don't know if they walk on Norvell. They're getting 25.5 against Notre Dame, so the Irish need to pound them. If let's put two things together.
Yes.
Maybe only two wins, and Deion gets to 9. Oh, boy.
Well, okay, so that's three things for me. One, Notre Dame needs to destroy this team because Notre Dame has to stay up in the rankings to get to go to the playoff because there are still teams that can pass them because they don't have a conference championship game. So that's one. Two, Florida State maybe getting the two wins. We came into this season, Norvell was on top, Billy Napier underneath. Yeah. The end of November, Billy Napier is going to put the screws to Florida State. And this is a team that's coming off an undefeated season that tried to tell us, everyone, that they belong in the college football playoff. Guess what? You're not going to a bowl game this year, player. And three, the Deion situation is lining up for him perfectly in terms of if Colorado goes to the Big 12 championship game, win or lose, they go to the Big 12 championship game, there are going to be people that are clamoring for Deion to be the coach at Florida State. Both from a look at that turnaround standpoint, but also from a, hey, he could be the face of the program. Our program will be out of kind of the doldrums. We can push us. He can help push us forward. He does the Aflac commercials. He'll be able to do all this stuff. So there's those. That's the three things that I'm looking at. But I'll start with Notre Dame because they have to destroy. What's crazy is when they looked at their schedule preseason, Cofield, they looked at that schedule, they're like, okay, we get Florida State in November. That's going to be – it's a November to remember. That's a game that folks are going to care about, that they will love. It'll be prime time. We're good. And now the best game – and they also looked at USC.
Yep.
They're like, USC, yes, we got Florida State and USC. We're definitely going to beat them and go to the playoff. Now – their best game. You know what their best game is, right?
Yes, the glamour game, yes.
It's Army. Yeah. Their best game's Army. That's the only one they have left. So they got to win, and so they've got to trounce. They absolutely have to trounce Florida State.
Style points. I want to see them all weekend. Style points.
Yes. Pile it up. Yes.
All right, Michael, great job. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you.
No problem. Take it easy.
There he is, Michael Felder, Bleacher Report, and Learfield. Sign up for his newsletter at itsfelder.substack.com. We're live in Hawaii today getting ready for the Rebels and Hawaii tomorrow and at Treasure Island. Salerno is at the set at Treasure Island. He's coming up in just a few. Remember, at Treasure Island, great specials on Fridays and through the weekend. Tremendous menu, including the two Loco Mocos. Greg loves the chicken salad sandwich. And then tomorrow, 9 to 11, we're out there twice. The place is so cool. We have two shows out there. Jared and Danny will be manning Throw the Flag. That starts at 9 a.m. tomorrow, live at Treasure Island, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar.